Naughty, producer, DJ, beatmaker, and I'm living in Saigon, Vietnam.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over.
Thank you so much for coming on. And first off, I want to shout out to your partner, Sue. Sue Boy, for introducing us. I've been waiting a long time to sit and talk with you. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you for the invitation, bro.
Well, I had your father on when I first started, Mac Yao, and it was an amazing podcast episode for me because I learned so much about the history of the Vietnamese as it relates to the French, because he was in France way before, you know, any of us were born and before the 1975 change. And so looking back, what was it like for you to be born in France and raised in France?
Oh, it's a wide question, you know. Maybe can you be more a little bit specific like
yes.
that? It will be more easy to answer.
Yes. What specifically, you know, I think the diaspora for the Vietnamese American and the Vietnamese French is very different. We look at the situation of us all moving very differently and our growth in America and in France, very different for the Vietnamese. And so I wanted to know, based on your experience and your being raised in France, how different that was from my experience as an American. You know, what was your feelings towards French society as you were raised in France and now living in Vietnam, the differences of what you've gone through as it relates to the rest of us?
I think one of the big difference between Vietnamese diaspora in America and in France is, like, if I'm not wrong, I think the Vietnamese diaspora in America is quite packed. Like, you have kind of semi-story. You know, is most of them came after 75, you know, to escape the country and stuff. In France, we have different immigration of Vietnamese people, you know. Some people came, like Ho Chi Minh, they come in early to study. My parents came to study in the 60s. Some people escaped the country around 75. So we have different Vietnamese, especially during the war. Sometimes they don't like each other. Sometimes they reproduce the Vietnam War in Paris, you know. So we have fight, and my big brother told me, give me all these stories. So I think that's a main difference. Second difference, I think France and America have some few differences in terms of how they think the immigration. I know in America, the community is quite more strong, the idea of community. In France, is, I will be a little bit short, but it's like, okay, let's escape the community. One community is the French community, and we're all together, we all brothers and sisters, and there is no difference. That's the theory. In fact, maybe it's a little bit different. So so that's one of the big difference. And I know now, since I'm in Vietnam, you know, I think one of the big thing for me as a Viet Kieu, I think I love to define myself as a Viet Kieu, and is to meet a lot of Viet Kieu from different country, you know, from Germany, France, America, and Australia, and whatever. And I can see, like, one of the big difference is, like, it's not a completely more cham fan cham rule accurate, but, like, Vietnamese, French Vietnamese, we're really bad in Vietnamese, like, really bad. And the American are quite better, you know, are much better. German are quite better, but French, we're really bad. And I think is what I say about the French immigration. We have to erase a little bit our roots, you know, because after when I was in France, I have like French who are from origin from Morocco, Algeria, West Africa, and they have the same issue. Like, they know the French, but they don't know so much about the motherland language, you know. Well, so I think it's one of
why do you think that the French Vietnamese, as a general sort of idea, know less about the motherland's language?
It's okay. It's hard for me to answer. I'm not a scientist, but first, I think from a lot of Vietnamese American, when they came, they don't speak. The parents don't speak so much English. You interview my father. He's quite good in French, you know.
Right.
Even in some ways, speak better French than me. You know, he's like really, you know, he have this
educated,
this thing, so educated. So
in French,
maybe
yeah.
Also, is much more. And even my mother, when she was in Vietnam, she studied in French school, you know, Lycée Yersin in Dalat. So
right.
She have a good French. So first, they speak me in a really good French. A second thing is, I think there is the idea was like, yeah, we have to hide in some way or the origin. I don't know if hide is the right word.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. You want to blend in more.
Yes, I think there is something like that in France. You know, it's not conscious. I think it's more unconscious. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, as I talk to more people when it comes to French history in Vietnam, I begin to learn much more of what I, you know, I'm very ignorant in the way the French, this sentiment of Vietnamese people as it relates to France. And I think that there's a big range, you know, for young people or for generations like mine who study about colonialism, there's often this sense of anger that the French came in. But for the previous generation, sometimes I feel like there's a big love for France and what they did for the history of Vietnam. And so now my viewpoint is very balanced about, it's becoming more balanced about what the French contributed to Vietnam's history. How do you feel about France being in Vietnam throughout the history of Vietnam?
Now you talk about colonialism, and I think it gives also another element for your previous question. All my friends I told you who have different background or origin from France, one of the common points, we all from country who was colonized by France.
Correct.
And also, I think there is this idea of like, we part of this French empire, we have to speak French, you know, which is different for Vietnamese in America, you know. I think it's not the same point of view, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the colonization, I think it's like when I see in Vietnam, I think people they're not mad about colonization, you know. I think it's my father who explained me that. I think it's like there was the French colonization, but right after the Vietnam War with America. So I think the Vietnam War in America erased the past, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, what I can see in Vietnam is really interesting. I think the two countries who get the independence from the French colonization is Vietnam and Algeria, you know? So I don't know if it will answer your question, but I feel there is some kind of pride to get their own independence by itself. So I think there is something we solved, you know, which is different from other countries where the French give back their independence. And I think France, Vietnam, and Algeria take their own independence, and there is something like, okay, we own our own independence, so now we're in peace, you know. I don't know. It's just I'm not sure, but that's what I feel now when you ask me the question.
Yeah, this episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. I love cooking with Red Boat because it's made with only two ingredients: wild-caught anchovies and sea salt. This premium fish sauce is made in Phu Quoc, Vietnam, and bottled right here in California. You can find Red Boat at select Asian supermarkets like 99 Ranch, H Mart, and Tung Phat. Yeah, because I've often think about the French bringing Catholicism to Vietnam, and you know, I was forced to become a Catholic because my parents were in the religion of France or of a colonizing country. And often when I think about that own history of Vietnam, I'm conflicted with being forced to follow something that is not really inherently from the Vietnamese culture. It's from the outside, but they have a love, a deep love. My family has a deep love for France. And I think that a lot of their generation has a deep love for France. And somebody who is from my generation, like yourself, I often wonder, how do they feel about France as a colonizer, as it relates to Vietnam?
But when you say they, who are they? When, like, how do they feel? Who are they in your question, Kenneth?
When I think about they is you. They is people who are Vietnamese descent that grew up in France. How do you feel about the French at this point, you know, that they've had this long history in Vietnam and oftentimes a lot of beautiful things that they contribute to Vietnamese society that gives it a very special flavor hundreds of years later?
Okay. First, I want to talk about Vietnamese people who are in Vietnam. I think there is something who amazed me a little bit. It's like there is no so much anger. Like even with against American, they don't have no anger.
About yeah.
Japanese, they have no anger. Maybe China is a little bit different, but it's more for this recent politics. But even that, and I feel there's something, honestly, I really enjoy in Vietnam is like, there is something to accept the past and let's go forward with no anger. And I really enjoy that, to be honest. And if I want to answer about me, my point of view of Vietnamese born in France, I think it's too tough to answer. I still figure it out who I am. It's something really blurry because... But yeah, it's the past. Just the past. I try to just understand more the past. I'm still a student, a beginner. But what I can say right now, Kenneth, is like I'm much more happy in Vietnam than in France. It's hard for me to give you more details to explain, but I don't know if it's because of the colonialism. I don't know, but I think it's not about that really. It's just France is a little bit tough, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a very nice answer. I recently got hammered by my depiction of what I think is such a beautiful, there's so many beautiful aspects to living in Vietnam. I have family living in Vietnam. My brother lives in Vietnam. And I think that, you know, not everybody in Vietnam is having a great life, but it is very different from the depictions that our parents told us about the modern Vietnam. You know, it's a good place. It seems like a good place. And I think that we should be allowed, Vietnamese Americans should be allowed to go back by our parents and to experience the motherland and to have a feeling the way you described it, that there is no animosity towards the diaspora and towards other countries that were colonized by Vietnam.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the reason is like the country is quite young in terms of demography, you know.
Yeah.
I guess there is some old people who still have trauma, but because they're not so much, like, have you seen Vietnam is a lot of young people and the country is booming. So they don't think about it.
They don't care about it. I think many of the people of, you know, my generation of Vietnamese Americans, we are forced to think about it because our parents carry so much baggage and trauma from that era.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
No. So yeah.
How did you get into music?
I have that since I'm kid, you know, I'm a baby. First, I have half brother and half sister, but since I'm 5-6 years old, I live by myself with my parents, you know. So I was a little bit alone, like in sense of my father have to work, I have to follow him, and just have to draw and do stuff by myself, you know. And my parents also are quite activist at that time when I was a kid, so I have to follow them in meetings and stuff. So with old people, so I have to find my own world, you know. And I remember when I was 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me a small radio, FM radio, just to not get bored. And I think that's the main reason why I love music. It was for me a way to just enjoy. But even before that, I remember like old memory, like go to Pagoda. And what I remember is the music. So I think my brain is quite sensitive with the music, so that's why I enjoy it. I think it's my connection in my brain who make that. It's quite natural, you know.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, in preparing for a future career, you studied economics for about a year, and you said this is not me. But before that memory of studying economics, did you have a need, a deep-seated understanding that perhaps one day you were going to become an artist or a musician or a producer?
Okay, I think it's a really good question, and there is two things. First thing is, like, from the start I love music, and I think I secretly dreams to be in that world. Second thing is because we don't have musician in my family, I was a little bit scared to become a musician, you know. I guess it's a quite common topic for a few Asian kids, you know. It's like, okay, we have to be secure a little bit. So even if my parents are quite open mind, I was like, damn, music is complicated. Especially when I was a teenager, it was the music crisis, you know. You know, it was the time like nobody buy CD. It was the beginning of internet, and it was really confusing, and the economy was quite complicated. And I remember some people saying, okay, maybe the music industry is over, you know. So I grew up with that thinking. I'm like, okay, maybe don't do that. So that's why I was trying to do economics, because I quite like when I was in high school. And finally, when it was not good, I choose to not become a musician, but to become a sound engineer. You know, I was like, okay, that's something like more concrete, you know,
stable.
Stable, exactly, stable. And even at the beginning, I was like, okay, the music industry is quite fucked up, let's move to television. So in the first year, I worked as a sound engineer in television, because it was not affected by the digital crisis at that time. Yeah.
But when you got into the sound engineering, you probably began to understand that there is a sound inside of you. There is a creative voice inside of you. And how did you make that leap to go from sound engineer into producing things that came out of your own heart?
I think I really want to do music, but maybe I cannot say it like that, you know, but I want to do music. So I start to become sound engineer. When I start that school, there is some people who are quite more advanced in terms of music, who start to do music by themselves. And that's how I learn. I just follow my friends in that school. I'm like, oh, this is how you do, and da da da. And I start to create music when I was in school, you know. But I was like, okay, it's just for fun. I won't make it will not become a job. So that's why I choose to be a sound engineer in television. But in parallel, in the same time, I start to do I start to become a sound engineer in a hip hop label in Paris, you know. And I start to record some rapper and stuff, mix their own tracks. And I start to do music. Some of the rappers, they listen that music and they're like, whoa, it's good, Nody. Can I use this beat for my album and stuff? I'm like, okay. So that's how I start to collaborate with the rappers and stuff and musician. And so at the beginning, it start to make a small money and stuff, and like that, I was like at the point like oh, maybe I should stop to work as a sound engineer in television and completely dedicated to the music.
In the early days, as I've studied your progression in your work, I could feel that, I mean, you've mentioned it, that you could see that beat makers and producers were using, American hip hop producers were using sampling from the old, perhaps Motown, or the old samplings of music, particularly Kanye West. When I think about Kanye, and I
of
could,
course.
Yes, I could see the sort of, and that was a very beautiful time for me when I think about Kanye in the early days, College Dropout, those albums, Graduation. And when I think about that, and I look at your history, and I'm seeing that you've commented on that, and then you made a switch over sort of into your own memory bank of the sounds of your early childhood. Can you tell me a little bit about that transition of sound for you?
Okay, it's a really, yeah, this question is my life, you know? First, I'm French. We love hip hop. I love hip hop. And the mecca of hip hop is America. Is New York. So we have to do exactly like what the Americans do. So I sample jazz, I sample soul, I have a huge culture in soul and all the Black American music, you know, and French hip hop during in the 90s and 2000. We just do like that because we try to do like the same, like the Big Brother in America. And I remember when I was a kid, it was in 2001 or 2002, there was a band's name is 113, is one, three people, one African Malian, one Black guy from the West Indies, and one Algerian. And they make a song, it become a hit. It's become, it's named Tonton Du Bled. It's like Tchou from the Kwehung, you know? And it was a song about one of the Algerian guy. He said easily he grew up in my area in Paris, and every summer you have to go back in Algeria. And they sample for that time, they don't sample soul music or jazz music, they sample Algerian music. And it was a hit. And first time I listened to that song, I was like, whoa, rap sample Arabic for North African Algerian music. And it became a hit, and it was like, wow, it was amazing. And I think that thing unconsciously switched my mind. And I was like, okay. And I start to understand, oh, American people, the American rappers and beatmakers, they sample soul, jazz. But why? Because they, it's just the music they have at their house, you know? It's just the music the parents listen, you know? So the kids, when they took the vinyl of their parents, it's soul, it's Curtis Mayfield, it's Miles Davis, it's whatever, and they sampled that, and it's become their own music. But I was like, okay, but what is the music in my family house? Okay, we listened a little bit of jazz, but if I want to be honest, we listen French pop music and Vietnamese pop music or thing. So I'm like, okay, my parents are not a Black American. They're Vietnamese living in France. I should embrace my my background, like exactly what the American do. And like that, it will be more authentic, you know, exactly what the hit I told you, you know, the with the Algerian rapper. So that's, I stopped that process, and slowly it become more important, you know. But the issue, no, it's not an issue. It's like, I start to do that more and more. The thing is, in France, there is no Vietnamese people, you know, or even Asian, they not so much, you know. And I remember in 2015, like I work on an album of a name of a rapper named Youssoupha. He's French, but his background is from Congo. So Africa, West Africa. And I only sample Vietnamese music, you know. And I was like, And even that rapper, after that, the album was quite a success and stuff. And he said, yeah, Nody, I think you should dig more into your roots. You know, I think you start to do that in your music and stuff, but you should dig deeper, you know. And when he say that, I remember I have these memories. Like, I look at the studio of Youssoupha, and I'm like, damn, all the people are African, you know. And I'm like, okay, if I want to dig deeper into my roots, it seems in Paris, I don't have so much connection, or it's not so much possibilities, because you know, at that time, I think it's better, but at that time, you know, Vietnamese, I think in America is the same, but we go more safe. We go sounding engineer, doctors. We work on pharmacy, you know, a little bit like that, but not so much artists, you know. And I think after the years, I understand also that's the one of the reason I moved to Vietnam, you know.
You know that Yusufa rapper, I think I read that you got an offer from his producers to come on board to help him, but you declined working with him. Is that right?
Yes. They want to sign me
Yeah.
as a
Producer.
artist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
the decision, because I think you said no to it, right? You said no to that deal. And I think that is, when I read that, I was very touched, because I think that when you get an opportunity like that to work in, a paid position and a situation where it's stable and you get to produce and you get to create for something that's really not something you want to do, and you said no to it, is a big decision at that time. But in my mind, I was thinking, couldn't you do both? Can you produce? And this is a bigger question. Can you produce something for somebody else and create music that is for another culture, as at the same time producing things that is for your own sound?
Of course, it's possible. It's possible. It's definitely possible. You know, even today, I do music for advertising, so it's not my world. But the thing is, it's just guts feeling. You know, it's really interesting the my story with Youssoupha, because when I least I was a fan of Youssoupha at that time, and Youssoupha he did he, at that time he do like traditional rap, like hip hop, classic hip hop, you know. And I was really connected to that. And at that time, in the lab in his label, if I want to be honest, there was a lot of different origin background. But slowly and slowly, when I start to work with him, so my period with him was like 2 3 years, you know. I never signed in his label, but I was quite close, you know. They give me the keys of the studio, and we were really good friends. But I can see the evolution. And what is the evolution? It's like he signed some new artists, the beats start to sound more African, you know. And they naturally they go more, they try to dig more their African roots, you know. So they start to be less influenced by the American trend, and start to become more African, you know. So you know, it's more rhythm, like boom. I really enjoy, huh? Don't get me wrong, I really enjoy, but they start to sign African composer and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, I can do that. I love that, but it's strange. I'm an Asian guy. I feel it's like, yeah. I think if I want to dig my roots, I need to do something else, you know. And there is this thing, and second thing is like slowly and slowly after the years, I start to feel disconnect with the friends, with the country in general, with my life. It's like I feel I close a chapter. I don't know what's happened, but I know I close a chapter. So yeah, and at that time, you know, I was with someone, with a girlfriend who tried to open my mind and say, oh, you should see What's happened in the world? What's happened outside of France? What's happened outside of rap? Because also I start to feel bored in the rap too. Also, I start to feel bored. I start to feel old. So I want a new thing. And when I start to check what's happened outside, I discover some artists in China, and I start to work with them. And that was the beginning of my journey to Asia. And the thing I want to say is that I start to feel bored in France. And that's the main reason why I declined the offer with Youssoupha.
Yeah. You know, before we leave France and move to Asia, Southeast Asia, you know, I just wanted to bring up a funny fact. I remember in like 2007, I was introduced to MC Solar. And I really liked his stuff. I was had a few French friends from Lyon and Paris, and I was so into that that sound. And when I think about French rap, how France and French hip hop adopted a lot of the sounds of American hip hop. And I think about like now when you come from that sort of time period, and now you are not responsible for the new Vietnamese sort of sound. You're not responsible for it, but you're definitely on the cutting edge of producing those kinds of beats for the new Vietnam. Do you feel like things could get old really quick as you're doing this new sound and you're creating a new sound, and it's hard to stay with the young, growing sounds of hip hop in Vietnam? When I think about the evolution of how quickly music goes from like MC Solar, right? And you said, you know, you were bored, and, you know, when you listen to the French hip hop, you needed to grow. But now I think about where you are positioned in Vietnam at the cutting edge of Vietnamese sort of hip hop and beats making. Does it move very quickly to the point where you're like, oh, I'm getting old here? And in terms of like growing into a different sound, how do you keep up with the growth of evolution of music when it goes so quickly?
You're right. It's not related to Vietnam. It's everywhere. It's the music. It's the world. I can say it's the hip hop, but it's the world. It's going really fast, and trends are really fast. So the answer is try to get in touch with what's happened. You know, try to never stay in your same position. Try to accept the evolution. You know, and that's one of the thing. And the other thing is me. I personally accept to not be trendy. You know, I just do my thing. You know, when I was in France the last year, I sampled Vietnamese music. In France, it was not trendy at all to sample Vietnamese music, but I just do because that's what I feel. So I do in that direction. So with that state of mind, I continue to do what I feel. You know, it's trendy. If not trendy, it's not trendy. You know,
doesn't matter.
I don't care. You know. Yeah, because I know I have some friends, especially at that time when I was in France, who tried to force themselves to be on train, you know, to stay young. And I feel that if I do that, I will lose myself, you know. You know, to stay in that, always on train, always hype, always young. I feel that, it's not my path, you know. I think I need more time, and I'm okay with that, you know. I try to create my own trend. That's the most important for me, you know.
You know, speaking about trends, in the early days when I was doing the podcast, I often thought about, and I was very angry about the takeover of K-pop, K-pop taking over the music scene in Vietnam and all over the world. You know, I was very jealous of K-pop.
Why?
Because it's not Vietnamese. It's not Vietnamese, and K-pop is imported into Vietnam, and it's changed the way we've sort of, you know. So that's my thinking in the early days of the podcast. But, you know, I've grown a little bit and been more open-minded. but very fearful that another culture is so strong that it influences the way we produce our sound and our own music. But you asked me why. So you probably don't feel the same way I do about K-pop then.
Yeah, but because I'm not mad, you know, it's like before we were influenced by American.
Yeah.
I was not mad, you know, and now there is America, now there is South Korea. I can feel now there is Nigeria, you know, it's just yeah, it's just soft power, you know, soft power is soft power. But yeah, maybe you asked that you were mad because you see the South Korea taking over and not Vietnam, you know. But yeah, we don't have the same history, we don't have the same politics, we don't have the same economy, you know. But yeah, let's see in the future, you know.
But do you see a shift? Do you see a growth that is departing away from K-pop and growing into our own voice in Vietnam?
What I think is like Vietnamese people are proud. Are really proud. So yes, it will happen, you know. So it will have a shift. That's what I think. The thing is, you know, K-pop is a strong industry with a politics, is soft power, you know, and they put money on Samsung, they put money on the cinema, they put money on the music industry, because like America, like what's happened in America, they have a strategy, you know, is to conquer the world. Vietnam, I don't think we have the state of mind to conquer the world. We are proud to resist against the opponent, the invader, but it seems, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think Vietnam has the thinking like, let's conquer the world. And one, I think right now is like, I'm okay to Vietnam not conquer the world. I think it's quite good. It's quite healthy, you know, mm-hmm. to not become an imperialist. But I think we should be aware to have our own identity, you know. And I think that's the thing I think the most is like, okay, let's take the American, let's take the Korean. I think Vietnam, especially in Saigon, we love to take the influence for everywhere. But let's train after that to mix up and bring our own kitchen, you know, our own cooking. That I think that's what I think the most, you know.
I love your answer. I've never thought about it that way. The imperialist way of putting entertainment out into the world. It's a fascinating viewpoint because, you know, when you do think about the soft power issue, if Vietnam doesn't strive to have that soft power, then there's no investment into the entertainment side, right? And
yes,
very good point.
And honestly, I would love, yeah, maybe it's not now, but I would love Vietnam organize himself and put money just for the culture to help the artists, because yeah, it's part of the soft power. I think they start to do that with the VinFast. I see, you know, I'm from Paris. They open 5 VinFast shop, you know, even in Champs-Élysées. So I think they have the idea of soft power, you know. But I know soft power is also, we need the culture, and I would love Vietnam also invest on that, not to be the boss of the world, but at least to have a voice. And I think it will happen. It will happen. Just we have to be patient a little bit and be part of that. And I'm really happy to just be part of a small piece of that thing, you know, definitely.
Big piece. Yeah. You're a big piece, a big part of the evolution of the
Let's see in the future. Let's see my Wikipedia when I will die, what we will say about me. But right now it's just a small piece.
Yeah. How is the music industry evolving? And more specifically, I want to know more about the business side, the copyright, the legal side of making music, the protections within music, because I think that is a big component in the development of the arts, is the business side of protecting artists like you when you put out music, when you sample things. How is that all changing?
Okay. In terms of copyrights, especially from a French guy who I think in France who have the one of the strongest copyright system in the world. Yeah, in Vietnam, it seems there is still the Far West, you know, it's still messy as fuck, you know.
No protection, yeah.
Not really, but it's not completely true because I can see that in the same time that I arrived, like 5 years ago, there was the coming of, you know, structure, especially from the West, you know, like Universal, Warner, Believe, who is a French structure, you know, and yeah, and this even Spotify, you know, there's all these things start to become more growing up, you know, there is more and more artists who sign Vietnamese artists who sign on this structure, and they hope that all this structure, they hope that one day we will the government and can set up a system to a better system in terms of copyright. So yeah. It will take time, but yeah, it's not there yet. But you know, it's so because also there is structure who are quite yeah, now some new rapper they can sign on Universal, get have some money, you know, but it's the beginning, it's still the beginning, and yeah.
Well, that's
the copyrights are definitely like it's not like the West, yeah.
Yeah, it's but it's hard to enforce because you need to have very strong legal infrastructure in place. Not only on the general level, but down to the very street level to have it enforced. You need people to understand why these infrastructure needs to happen. And I think that, you know, Vietnam is a place where, you know, it's beautiful to watch the development of this starting to happen.
Yes. And okay. And in the same time, Kenneth, honestly, I like the messiness of Vietnam. Mm. You know, I like we don't give a shit. I like, okay, maybe we'll not, there is a lack of copyrights, but I'm from France, you know. I can see the industry is stronger, but I don't know. I moved because it was a little bit sad, you know. And you know, we love Vietnam. I love the street food. I love the street culture. And yeah, I'm happy because there is something alive, you know, something organic, you know. And I guess the day all this street food, they have to pay copyrights for the music they broadcast from the speaker, we will lose something, you know, we will lose something we like in Vietnam, you know. So, you know, that's why I'm in between, you know. I think the messiness also is part of the
beauty,
what we love, you know. Yeah, the beauty is like, okay, you go in the street, you wanna open a fur business, let's go. And we will manage after for the thing, for the paper, for the tax, you know. But there is this thing I like, you know. And in France, you know, okay, we have more copyrights from the system, but everything is more complicated, you know. Everything is too system. And
hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
Yeah, you see my point?
Yeah, I see it 100% because I remember going to Paris in 2008-09. I remember that talking to a lot of young people. And by that time, I had about, you know, I've started five businesses at that point, you know, lost money and, you know, but they said to me that it is impossible for young people to start businesses because there's so much bureaucracy when you open up a business in Europe and in France.
Yes. And just to, yes, definitely. And to continue with this copyright system, you open a shop, you want to put music, you have to pay the copyrights to give a percentage of your benefits to for the copyrights. As a musician, I'm happy, you know, but I can understand for this the young entrepreneur,
yeah,
yo, it's a pain in the ass. And in Vietnam, that's why I enjoy. It's like, it's free, you know. It's like, you want to open, it's easy, you know. It's much
you can
more
do anything.
Easy than in France. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a pros and cons to all of this, right?
You see, yeah. And yeah, definitely.
So, you know, I've read somewhere that your present moment right now, asking about what kind of music you listen to, and you answered Saigon's a really loud place, and you know, you live in the music world, but you appreciate silence a lot more today. Is that something that has changed, or as you grow older, you feel like silence has been very good for you?
Yeah, especially at getting old, you know, I think, you know, I just buy that, like AirPod, you see, why? Just because they have this noise reductor, and I enjoy so much. Yeah, Saigon, you know, Saigon is really loud, you know, there is loud. Vietnamese people are really loud. Even in the north, they're really loud. They speak loud. They speak in the same time. And yeah, also, but yeah, with the years as a musician, my ears a little bit fucked up. So yeah, I try to protect my ears. So I really enjoy silence. But do you think find the right balance?
But do you think that you know, I have a conflict with music. Because I feel like, and this is just a weird theory for me, my own self, is that as we grow older, and if you listen to music a lot in your teenage years, in your 20s and 30s, as you get older, your brain recognizes the repetitive patterns in chord progressions, the beat patterns. And unless you're listening to jazz, American jazz, which goes all over the place and it's very... very open and free. But if you listen to a lot of pop music, I feel like as people who are consuming music a lot, you get used to the patterns and nothing is new anymore. And after you get to about 50 years old, you've heard all of the musical patterns and you've heard the way lyrics are constructed and the way the songs are constructed. The patterns are all very much similar depending on what genre you're in. And I have this weird theory that our brain gets so used to the millions of different patterns and song progressions that we just tune out and we get bored. And that's why you see a lot of people in their 50s and beyond not as interested in music anymore. And that's
when
I thought about your silence, you know, you like silence. I felt like, what if you're burned out on music?
There is some truth on what you say. There is some truth. I think, yeah, I'm start to, even you talk about music is I would say is information, you know. I have this thing, I spend a lot of hours on that, sounds, visual, Instagram, scrolling. So my brain is a little bit, you know. So of course you're completely right, you know, you're completely right, you know. But in other time, I still enjoy music, you know. So yeah, it's there is a paradox, you know. But what I can say about that is what I like in Vietnam is the way to do music, especially in the traditional Vietnamese music. Is still something new for me, you know, because I grew up in France, but yeah, the way to move the town, the tones like that, like the Dang Bao or the people who sing in Vietnamese, is quite unique for me. It's quite new for me, you know. And so I listen to even the bolero or traditional music in the streets. For me, is quite new. And also that's why I enjoy to be in Vietnam because, the traditional Western gam, I start to feel bored. And I'm pretty sure the pop music in the future will try to break the Western rules, music rules, you know, to become more influenced from Asia, Arabic tones, or everything like that. But yeah.
Yeah, it's like when you first heard reggaeton on the radio a few years ago. It's like so new and it's so great to hear for dancing and everything. But after 5 years, your ears are just so used to it. But it's amazing to hear that you're saying that the Vietnamese sounds, the music, the traditional music and the bolero and all of that is like it's new to you still, and it's you're able to incorporate. But that being all said, I wonder how difficult is it for somebody like you after 5 more years of being used to the sounds of what you just described as new? How do you find the next thing as an artist?
You're right. I start to be used to, but it's not over. I think what I want is study more deeply, study more, yeah, the history. So, yeah. I know there is a lot of history of music in Vietnam. I know nothing, you know, Nhạc Quang Họ, all these things in the north, especially you interview my father is from Bắc Ninh.
Yeah.
I've been to Bắc Ninh and a lot of my friends say, oh, Bắc Ninh in terms of Quang Họ music, that's the Mecca, you know, and at some point you have to go, you know. So, you know, I know. One day I will go, I will study more of that music, more. I want to study more of the music of the ethnicities in Vietnam, you know. I know nothing, you know. I just have, I see some stuff on YouTube, you know, but I want to study more. And I know there is a lot of things to learn, I guess, still, you know.
You know, when you're, you have a documentary called The Noti Process that your friends made about you. And I remember when it first came out, but there was no way for me to view it. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about it and how can regular people, our audience, find that documentary?
Oh, it's a good question. I need to talk to my friends, Taman, Mael, and Vincent, who did it. So yeah, we did it like a few years ago. We released it on YouTube. After to go on festival, we decide to take off YouTube and we just put on private link on Vimeo. And now we take it off again for, I don't know why. So are we just to go on festival, you know, even we did the Viet Fest in America and stuff. But now I think the run of festival is over. So I'm thinking, so maybe let's go bring back in YouTube. But yeah, I need to talk to my friends about that. But yeah, definitely.
Can you tell me about the documentary?
So the documentary is exactly what I said so it's made by three of my friends, Maël, Léuron, Vincent Nguyen, his nickname is Francis Cutter, and Taman. And so they three with Kiều Pháp, like me, you know, born in France, but with Vietnamese parents or half Vietnamese, you know. So we grew up in the same community in France. And they're just my friends, you know, and they see me at that start to, doing my thing in the music. And it's just they want to, just as a friend, shoot me, just follow me, film me, and see what's happened. Let's create a documentary and stuff like that. But it was in the same time that, like, as I told you, I was start to feel bored in France. I'm like, damn, I need a new chapter. I start to be depressed in France, and I have the opportunity to move in China. They're like, okay, let's continue to film. Until I moved to Vietnam, okay, they film again. And when I get my kid and I meet Suboy and stuff, they're like, oh, I think we have the end of the documentary, because they shoot me during 5-6 years, something like that, you know. But yeah, and at the end, because at the beginning we shoot just for fun, you know, just friends who like to follow me and they film me. And at the end is a documentary about, identity crisis of Viet Kieu Pháp who decide to leave France to move back in Asia, you know. So yeah, that's the core of the documentary.
Mm. And that, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that in the diaspora, because that transition, that going from, you know, bored and depressed person who is living in a different country and then going back and shifting back into the mother homeland is a very it's a very common feeling that we all have.
Yeah. So you think I should put back in on YouTube?
Yeah, 1000%. Because I tried to find it, and I tried to find it a long time ago too, and I missed the whatever it was live. I was never able to view it. And I think that for me and a lot of the people that I kind of work with, we all have that experience of kind of getting bored and depressed with living in a culture sometimes where we grew up, and it's not really, we're not really American, we're not really French, but we're not really Vietnamese. But so we're existing in this weird third culture space that I think watching a documentary about somebody who's gone through it, it's therapeutic.
Okay, I will listen to you and I will convince my friends to put back on YouTube. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and then, you know, once you do that, you send me a link and then I'll put it, you know, in the description. You know, music is a very difficult thing to pursue today. And looking back on the last 10 years, what would you tell your younger self and new musicians starting out today? Not even advice, but just what would you kind of contribute to their development and mindset? What would you say to them? It's not even a business anymore, I feel like.
I don't know. I would say maybe don't have too much fear. Choi Lung, you know, let's go, you know, because I have so much, not fear, but you know, I play safe, you know, but also it's part of my journey, you know. But I start as a sound engineer, I have a full-time job as a sound engineer. I buy a apartment, you know, with that. So, you know, it's a way for me to secure the thing.
So are you telling young artists to play it safe, to find a job as a sound engineer, not a job as a sound engineer, but something like a sound engineer in the art profession that they can rely on and then practice their art on the side? Is that what you're saying?
Oh. No, it's just what I did. I don't know if it was the right way, because I was a little bit slow. You know, I was a little bit slow. You know, I quit my job. I was 28. You know, I know some people, they start music, they're 19, you know. So I don't know, you know, it's a really good question, but it's tough to answer. But I would say it's good to be safe. Honestly, now, right now, I'd say I would say, okay, my advice is don't lose the passion. Don't lose the love, you know. I know at some time I think too much about the money in my music and I lose happiness, I lose creativity. And when I was more okay in my mind, more positive, have more faith in the thing, I feel my music was better. So no matter what you do, yeah, try to keep the faith. Or maybe it's to play secure. I don't know. It's too hard to answer.
It's hard to have a good place state of mind if you're not having the money to survive. And I think
definitely,
yeah, it's very difficult. You can give up very quickly. And I think that is something that is not talked about when you're pursuing the artist route, is that you can burn out because you don't have money to survive and live.
Yes, definitely. Honestly, I think there is not a perfect answer. You know, it depends of your finance. If your parents have the money to help you, okay, let's go. You know, me, I'm from a background who, like, we're not poor at all. You know, but they cannot provide me enough money. You know, so I need to find a job and stuff. But And at the end, even me, my career is not crazy, you know. It's like, but I try to play a long term run, you know.
Yeah.
For me, my career will not stop at 30. No, I'm 40 today. You know, I'm pretty sure at 60, 70, I still be active for the culture, you know. What I see is, I don't think in term, I think it maybe it's a mistake, but I don't think so much in term of industry, you know. That's how I, you interview my father, you see how he thinks. I'm a little bit similar, you know. I just believe on what I do, and I think it's more than an industry, you know. Even if I don't make money at all, I will still continue, because for me it's just to create a culture, you know. When I, before we talk about Vietnamese music, yeah, I want to have a Vietnamese culture who fit in 2024 in this global world. That's what I care, you know. And the money, I will find money. I have a side job, I do other stuff. Yeah.
Oh, culture first, and then the money will follow.
That's my way. I don't know if it's the truth, is the right way, but that's my way, definitely, you know. And, you know, just before everything, before being rich, I want to be happy, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I met many people who are more successful than me, who are multimillionaire, who are famous as fuck. And I can see in the eyes, I'm much more happy than them. You know, so, you know, my goal is to be happy, you know. So, yeah, so I'm really happy with my path, you know, with my way. Of course, I would like to have more money. Yeah? Don't get me wrong. But yeah, happiness first. Happiness first.
I think Sue feels the same way. You know, every time I talk to her, it's a really happiness is first. That's the most important thing to her as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Because, yeah. I won't talk for Sue, huh, but I will talk for me. Long run, long run. You see my father, you interview my father. He's 84 now. He still meet people, translate stuff. Nodi process is the one who translate in Vietnamese, you know. He translate 1 hour in Vietnamese at 80 years old, you know. He's still active, and that's my model. You know, I want to be active, do my thing, you know. And yeah, and for the money, we find solution.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. What's next? What's the upcoming trajectory? What's the upcoming projects for you? What can we expect?
I hope new music soon, you know. Of course, they will have new music. There is already new music in the hard drive, but I want to make to release in the right way. In the right way. Improve my Vietnamese. Like, I'm quite okay, but I want to be really better, because I want to, I think I want to be you know, I want to talk with other people. Maybe I want to do video, podcast or anything, talk to people, but I think it's better if I have a better Vietnamese. So more film, more maybe documentary, more content on internet. As you said, now music is not, it's not a business. You have to do everything. You know? You have to be.
You have to do a lot.
A musician, yes. And I like that. Honestly, I'm okay with that evolution. You know, so I need to embrace the evolution. You know, so yeah, I think more content for the, yeah, for the young Vietnamese artists. You know, I think I still continue music, but I want to be a translator, a bridge. For the young artists in Vietnam, maybe to show in France or wherever, you know, in the West, to see what's happening in Vietnam, I think can be my job. Yeah.
My closing question. I often think about our children, your children, my children, children of our generation, our children. You are in a very interesting position because your mother tongue is French and you're raising your daughter in Vietnam. And I'm imagining between you and your, you know, and Sue, there's more English going back and forth. But the real pure communication that you've experienced with your mom and dad in French, because they're proficient French speaker, how do you envision the future of communicating with your daughter? Will it be in Vietnamese? Will it be in French? Or will it be in English?
Right now, she's 4 and a half. She's really good in communication, my daughter. And her main language is Vietnamese. She's quite advanced. She's really start to be really good in English. Just French, she's not really good. But let's see in the future. So
but the but the communication bridge between your mind and your fluency in the first language is French. And I think about my communication with my mom. If she didn't teach me Vietnamese, there would be no way I could speak to her entirely, being able to express how I feel about her, about the things that we experienced together. But because I share a deep ability to communicate with my mother, I haven't lost that communication. But you are experiencing your daughter living in Vietnam with very proficient Vietnamese and English. But the French language is what you can communicate fully in with your mom and dad and with the world in France. But will it be broken with that communication bridge with you and your daughter as she's learning different languages?
Maybe, but honestly, I don't care. I don't. It's not a big issue for me. It's not a big issue for me. My wife, she don't speak French, and we love each other. We don't speak in French. I'm okay, you know. She told me she fell in love with my music before to talk to me. So maybe my main language is my music, you know. I don't know, you know. And we laugh a lot with my daughter, you know. And even if my Vietnamese is broken, yeah, I feel she laughs a lot with my Vietnamese. So yeah, of course, language. But I honestly, I'm quite confident because I'm getting better and better in English. And without a doubt, Nina is a kid from YouTube. Is the YouTube generation? She like her English is quite good. You know, it's like for 4 years old, live in Vietnam, who study in Vietnamese school. Yeah, she speak Vietnamese. She speak English better than most of my friend in Paris. You know, so yeah, she will be really fluent in English without a doubt. You know, so maybe the main language to talk deeply, the more detail is the English will be the English.
Yeah,
probably. You know.
Yeah. Language is such a big part of our lives and communicating our thoughts. But yeah, I think about this quite a bit because language is you know, something that as artists we. Whether it's through linguistic communication or what you brought up is through music and sound is something that you can fall in love and communicate deeply with your partner or with your children.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like I see this new generation, especially, well maybe it's not good to think like that, but you see all the tools now we have right now to translate and stuff. Maybe it's bad to be too dependent on that, but yeah, it's too easy now, you know. Yeah, and Nina, she's a product of that, you know. She's about to speak three languages, maybe more in the future.
Yeah.
So I'm not so afraid about that. And also, and we're lucky, our daughter is really good in communication. Like she's really good, so I'm okay.
Nodi, thank you so much for today. I really had a great time talking and conversing with you.
Me too. Thank you so much for the invitation. And yeah, I can't wait to see your other interview. Who you will interview in the future? What's the next guest?
I always have, you know, 10 or 15 guests lined up. There's a person in the special forces military, somebody who's been doing that for a long time. And a lot of my guests are film people. So, you know, I always have a steady stream of film people and people in publications and books. So those are predominantly the guests that I really, you know, I have the access to that world. But I would love to actually meet more musicians and rappers in Vietnam because I don't have access to that world as much. And I would like to balance out my podcast with more guests from Vietnam, the youth culture from Vietnam, and grow, you know, more information, get more ideas and understanding of culture from the young Vietnamese in pop culture and even in underground cultures in Vietnam.
Amazing. But ask Sue or me, it's easy. We will give you the contact easily. And okay, I have a last question, Kenneth.
Yes,
I know I'm not the host, but what's for you the purpose of the Vietnamese podcast? You know, what's the main purpose for you with this podcast?
I think that there is a level of shame that I've always had growing up being Vietnamese.
Mm.
A level of pride that...
Totally get it.
You get it.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah. There's this lack of pride that I had growing up. And I think it's a hole in my heart and in my mind and my soul about not being able to fit in entirely in American culture, Vietnamese culture, but also being 100% Vietnamese, 100% American as well. I live in a weird kind of mindset that, and today I'm happy with it. I'm very at peace with this ambiguity, this not belonging to any space. But because I think it's still inside of me, I dig into that sort of that space, and it allows me to be very curious about how other people are experiencing this situation, whether they're living in Vietnam, living in America, living in France, or they're living all over the world. Having this understanding to grow and foster more information about the different experiences of the Vietnamese, that is my purpose.
I see.
As I'm getting to know and getting to interview different people, Vietnamese people, even non-Vietnamese people who are very closely related to the Vietnamese culture, it opens and expands my understanding of who I am and where I'm going. So now it's not so much based on the shame as much as it is exploring all the little crevices and niches of the Vietnamese cultures throughout the world. I really enjoy the evolution of being, I give a front seat, you know, to the changing culture of Vietnamese people.
Okay, I have two questions, but
no, you can please ask me more questions. I love being asked questions.
Okay, cool. I have the same feeling that you, so I share with your point of view, Motam Phan Cham. Can you tell me when did you feel the tipping point, or from shame it become okay, cool to be Vietnamese?
I think when I started the podcast, I was still feeling a lot of shame. And I think maybe 2 years into it, I began to see that everybody has some sort of weird shame. It's not very identifiable sometimes, and it's different forms of it. But a lot of people experience it. And I think men, Vietnamese men in America, experience it differently from Vietnamese women in America. It's different because... Yeah. Vietnamese women in America, I think, are, you know, they have it very differently than Vietnamese men in America. Vietnamese men in America had to go through a different type of media portrayal than, you know, perhaps Vietnamese women. Vietnamese women, obviously, there was bad depictions in Hollywood films for Vietnamese women, in especially war movies, you know, for sure. But I think Vietnamese and Asian American men are not depicted as strong sexualized stereotypes. And
of course, yeah,
we're not. We're emasculated in the media. And there's a long history of that. And I think growing up with that has made me feel, you know, inferior. It frankly has made me feel less than I should be feeling. And I think somewhere around after my second year in the podcast, I begin to see that pattern exist in a lot of people. And I think that once I began to see that this is existing everywhere, I began to embrace it and challenge it and really dig into why we feel that way. And then after you start to kind of like experience that, then you feel a little bit better about it.
What year, do you remember the year you have this switch?
Yeah, second year into the podcast, so around end of 2022. You know, I've never been asked that. So I'm just thinking out loud. I might be, you know, it's kind of fuzzy and transient all at the same time. But I think, you know, starting in 2023, I started to begin to feel like, oh, there's a lot of people that feel like me. And I was like, okay, my path in sharing all this information is important because now it's not just me feeling this way. There's a lot more other people feeling this way. And I think that women... Vietnamese women are feeling their own, you know, issues, and Vietnamese men are feeling their issues. We're all having these issues that relate to identity But it's not so much Vietnamese people in Vietnam feeling this, obviously, because when you have strength in numbers, you have 100 million people kind of living homogeneously in one location. You know, you don't have that same sort of weird, icky feeling that somebody who lives outside, grew up outside of Vietnam feels.
Yes, but you can feel that when I can see, like, in Vietnam, Vietnamese people, they can sometimes look down when they see Western people, white people, you know, because, you know, white people, they're bigger, they're stronger, and there is still this feeling. So you can feel it. You can see it also in Vietnam. But yeah, but it's different totally when you grew up as a minority, you know, as in America or in France.
Big and time.
I totally got your point. Totally
big time. Point, yeah, bro. You definitely feel it. But less so in the bigger cities now, like LA, New York, San Francisco. It's less feeling that. I think when I was growing up, we felt it a lot. And I was smaller. I was, you know, lighter and forming my thoughts and, you know, being around the Black culture, Mexican cultures, you know, a lot of obviously the white culture, being in the US Marines for 4 years for me, you know, it put me in a different weird situation.
You were Marines?
Yes,
before?
Yes. US Marines, yeah. Wow. For 4 years.
Wow. Okay.
And so all of that shaped the shame that I've come to kind of accept at this point. And that's why I think the goal of the podcast for me is to uncover the past of how we feel, the pride, the pain, all of the things that make us and our journey shareable. Because without the knowledge of seeing where we came from, it's hard to see where we're going. And I think tracking people like you, it really helps with the development of seeing where we're going, because it's so fascinating to see a French diaspora Vietnamese person existing in Vietnam today. And that's the evolution really of Vietnamese global community.
I see. Yeah. You want to, what's your future? You want to stay in America or you want to?
You know, I've wanted to live in Vietnam since I was a child.
Oh.
Since I was a child. But when I look back on my history, I tried to do it many times, but because of family situations, I had to take over my family business in 2000, 2004. My brother moved back to Vietnam 2004 to support our family business together, mom and dad and my brother. And I had to handle the marketing and sales in the United States. So I was tied here when my brother was the guy who didn't even want to live in Vietnam. He didn't even care about being Vietnamese because he was born in Vietnam. He didn't have the same attachment to identity that I have. Even to today, he doesn't care. It's just not a big deal for my brother. And I think something about being born in Vietnam, I don't know, maybe I'm analyzing from a different perspective, but he's much more comfortable with his identity. He was born in Vietnam, left Vietnam when he was 6 months old, grew up in the United States, was in the Marines with me. We went to the same University of Southern California. We're the same. We grew up the same, but he does not have the attachment to identity that I have being born outside of Vietnam. And he was the guy who didn't really care about this growing up. And now he lives in Vietnam 20 years. He teaches at RMIT for the last 16 years. He has, you know, like 200 people working for him in Vietnam as an animator. And he lives a life where that is like my dream life, to live, you know, in Vietnam. But I cannot move because I have children now that are in the United States. We, you know, they're in the system here that I cannot leave to go back to Vietnam anytime soon. And I don't even know in the future if I can even stay in Vietnam, because
I think like you see, you follow the story of Thai VG, you know, he bring back his kids too, you know, let's see in the future. But I talked with the daughter. She's 16 or 17 or maybe more now, but so she changed the scholar system and she's quite happy, you know. So
I would dream of doing that. I would dream of bringing my children to Vietnam to live there and, you know, and live in both places, right? There's beautiful aspects to being a Vietnamese American, and there's beautiful aspects to being Vietnamese American living in Vietnam and living a duality of both, you know, in having a place in America and a place in Vietnam. But that's a privilege, I think, that is, a dream. Definitely. For me. It would be a dream.
Yeah. Okay.
Nodi, okay. I think you should be a podcaster. You ask very good questions.
Maybe. Yeah, I think about that. I need to find the right topic, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I enjoy the questions that you've been asking, and I enjoy the conversation. And, you know, I hope that one day I can make a decision to move to Vietnam and to watch front row seats of Vietnam's development, because it's a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, the thing is, I think you acknowledge that, but you see how I think we talk about that the first time we meet, but I have this topic with Thai VG, with all my friends in France, you know, but like the West is getting tough, you know, West is getting tough, you know.
It is tough.
Yeah, you see, I don't know if you see the election in France, you know, but now the extreme right is, yeah, it's number one. They're number one. So I'm like, yeah, guys,
I feel that
when I move, I'm like, yo, it will be fucked up, you know, and I feel like how is more and more fucked up. So yeah, just I want to share that. I have nothing to say. Just, yeah.
Yeah, I went on a Vietnamese podcast here in Orange County, and I said, you know, one of the things I said is Vietnam Sung Lam, something like that. And it was made onto a thumbnail, and then I got crucified for that opinion. But I feel like it's changing for Vietnamese Americans that were born in the U.S., and we are so disconnected from Vietnam, and we're disconnected from Vietnamese American society in Little Saigon and Orange County. Many of us who are like in their 20s, 30s, and 40s don't really connect to the previous generation and the anti-government that our family went through. We it's so unfair for me to be criticized about like my feelings about the homeland. It's like ridiculous. You know, obviously I stopped reading the comments because it got to be so much to, you know, it's experience. I was like, shit, man, I didn't know that these people felt so strongly about us moving to Vietnam, us living in Vietnam, us looking at Vietnam in a certain way. Oh, you know, you don't shouldn't believe anything. And it's all bullshit. It's like, because that is their experience, but it's not my experience.
Okay, I have the last question, but now these comments, how old are these people who write that comments?
I think they're mostly older generation. Yeah. Mostly older generation, because they said, I lived through the war. I lived through blah, 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 you know, and, you know, I respect it. I understand it. And I have empathy for the loss of lives that my parents' generation went through. But at the same time, it's like, that's not what I experienced. You know, my grandfather was killed by another, you know, by that, you know, my uncles were in different education camp, re-education camps. I lived through the lineage of that war. Mm. But I can't say that Vietnam is that's not the same Vietnam that I'm experiencing. You know, it's not fair for me to want to grow into a different understanding of my Vietnamese homeland. It's not fair to me to be put through the oppression of my parents' generation. It's just not fair. And I hope it changes, and I know it will change, but it's the change is not moving quick enough for me. And I just frankly want to, you know, move away from the discussion of Vietnam as a war, because we are much more than a war. We are a beautiful group of people that are experiencing many beautiful things 50 years after the war.
I totally get it. Yeah. And you see, in Vietnam, the war is the past. It's not a topic anymore.
Yeah, like, because 70% of the Vietnamese are, they were born after the war. And anybody who was born during the war were so young anyway. So they didn't really experience, you know, so obviously there's still 70, 80, 90-year-old people living in Vietnam, obviously. But the majority, the overwhelming majority of the population has no recollection or understanding of even what it even, you know, for better or for worse. That's
a topic. That's this thing. And also the other thing is like, When we put 475, is like, okay, especially for, I guess, for the American video, like, there is no more after that. But for these people here, like, 75 is one milestone in the past. But now we have 2024, 2025. I mean, there is a future, you know, and they think about more like, I don't know, FPT, VinFast, like create the new thing, you know, Vietnamese culture and this optimism, you know, and that's the thing I really enjoy, you know.
Yeah. And you know, the leading, you know, a lot of the sort of creative thinkers in the United States, Vietnamese Americans, they don't even care about it. They just move on about the future, and their future is Vietnamese Americans. You know, that's what they like. That's what they're into. Okay. And that's the things that they're creating, you know? And so they, you know, the dwelling of the past is something that I really feel that we need to break free in our community to kind of move on and to create beautiful things that are for the future of Vietnam globally.
Yes, I agree, Kenneth. Thank you.
Yeah. Nody, thank you. And I hope one day that I can be on your podcast.
Definitely.
Thank All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.